I'm John Moe. This is Future Tense from American Public Media. The inventory in a grocery store is eggs, milk, bread. But in a social media website, the inventory is information provided by members, names, emails, pictures. So if that website goes out of business, what happens to that inventory? XY Magazine and its website XY.com catered to gay teenagers. XY went out of business in 2007. The founder has now filed for bankruptcy, and he's listing among his assets the personal information of XY subscribers, including 500,000 online users. XY had told users they'd never share the information, but creditors in the bankruptcy say they want that data, want to be able to sell it. Brian Cooley is an editor-at-large for CNET.com. Brian, what information are we talking about?
Typically, when you register for a site, it's usually the same fields you fill out. So there's name and email address almost always required. Then there might be a physical address that is usually optional, especially for a website registration. And also, there are often preference questions there about what interests do you have, household income, things like that, that are often valuable to marketers. But just the fact that a person would put their name and email address in a site that is meant for young gay men does have a connection that identifies a lot about them that they may not want known.
So what's so valuable about that information?
Well, when you go into a bankruptcy proceeding, what's valuable about a defunct website? You know, not much. The HTML web page files, not really. What's valuable is often the customer list, because it could be many people of a particular interest group, which is valuable to an advertiser. Advertisers value pre-vetted lists of email addresses and valid users who have an interest that they might want to market to. That's where this gets into a toss-up, if you will, of who comes first, the people who registered or the creditor who says, well, if you want me to buy these assets of your former site, the list is number one.
So what does the law say? Eric Goldman is an associate professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law. He also directs the school's high-tech law institute. Eric, does it make a difference in court that these were minors?
Dealing with kids online is an extra problem from a legal standpoint. In general, contracts with kids are voidable. What that means is that the kids can say, you know, I've changed my mind, and I'm going to tear up our deal. And the law allows them to do that in some cases. Having said that, I go back to this issue about notice and choice. Congress in 2000 passed a law that protected kids who were under 13 from having their personal information misused. That law only applies to kids under 13. So we've got this really ambiguous zone for kids who are 13 to 17 about what the rules are.
Those terms of service agreements that we all click off online, they're incredibly long. No one ever reads them. Do they actually hold up in court?
That's actually more complicated of a question than you might think. The short answer to your question is yes. We treat the privacy policies as legally binding on the user submitting data, even though it's kind of a fiction in that we all know that most of the users don't read it, and even those who read it probably don't understand it.
So what's the best way for someone to make sure the information they provide isn't distributed?
So I have an unsatisfactory answer to that. There is really no way for the average user, without taking extreme efforts, to keep very sensitive information about themselves out of the hands of databases that could be later resold or flipped or otherwise mined for commercial value.
Other stories we're following at futuretense.publicradio.org. Federal authorities arrested a 12th person in connection with spying for Russia. Turns out Alexei Koretnikov worked for the last 9 months as a software tester for Microsoft. Microsoft says he obtained absolutely no information during that time. Want an indication the economy is improving? Computer chip maker Intel reported revenues up 34% as more businesses started buying computers for the workplace. Producer Larissa Anderson is here. Hello.
Hey, John.
You have great news to report about technology.
Yes, a supercomputer in England named Hector has solved the classic question. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Finally, technology has made itself useful. Well, don't keep us in suspense.
Yeah, can I get a drum roll?
Sure.
All right. Using Hector, scientists found a protein vital in the formation of an egg. A protein that can only be found in a chicken. There you have it. Chicken came first.
Sadly, Hector never tells us how that chicken got there in the first place, though.
Or how it crossed the road.
Back to work, scientists. This is Future Tense. I'm John Moe.